Leadership values, where do they come from? This is Dr. Herbert L. Barley, Dean of the University of Healing here in Capo, California, with the Instant Illumination. Leadership values, where do they come from? What values define a leader? Is everyone capable of being an effective leader? Well, all of you sitting around this table, you think you're leaders. All of you think that you are an effective leader, and that you're a good leader, and that you're fantastic, and you're glorious, and you're wonderful. Well, that's good. Do you have a job of being a leader? Well, Ellen points to herself and says, yes, I'm a leader. I'm leading the campus program here. Seville says, I'm a leader. I'm the leader of the church in Nigeria. And Christy, what are you the leader of, Christy?
Myself.
Christy is the leader of the staff of the hospital at New Hampton. And
Newham
in London, England. And probably that's the wrong city, too, It's London? Okay, thank you. It's nice to get a few of the points right. And so she handles that very beautifully. And whenever she takes off, she tells her supervisor, now, you take care of everything for me. I will be back when I feel like it, you know. And the supervisor says, whatever you say. And so Christy is never in a rush. She always has the mud on time. And Ingeborg, what kind of a leader are you? I think you're the leader of dogs and cats.
Yes.
I think you really love to show dogs and cats how to live a fulfilled life. And you,
sir. They show it to me.
They show it to you. Well, that's what good leadership
is.
It's
our training.
That's what good leadership is. Henry, what kind of leadership are you? Are you the leadership of the department that you head in, where is that? Not Paradise, but
Plantation.
Oh, yeah, see, Plantation, that shouldn't be so hard. In Plantation, Florida. And you're the head of your department?
Utilities department.
Huh?
The utilities department.
The utilities department. And all other departments in the organization, in the school, in the church, in the city, are under the utilities department.
Or no, is it
the utilities department under the... And Sylvia, what are you the master of? What are you the leader of?
I'm really the leader of myself.
Well, that's what Chrissy said, too. And now, let's find out if all of you fulfill what we presume you are. Okay. What are leadership values? Well, leadership values are when you yourself are doing that which you are best qualified for. Now, what are you best qualified for? Are you best qualified for being a role model? Are you best qualified for being an executive? Are you best qualified for being a legal officer, like a mayor or judge or something? Are you best qualified for being heading your department in any organization you may be? Are you best qualified for being a teacher? Teachers are leaders too, you know. A lot of teachers are not leaders, and their classes show the results of it. But what kind of a leader are you? Now, a true leader is a leader who knows how to teach. And I was talking to one of you the other day, and I was saying to you, when you give your talks in your church or in your organization, do you have to have long, copious notes to remind you of the things you want to say, or do you just have a little outline that reminds you of the things you want to include? And every one of the things is well in your brain, well in your thought, because they are your convictions. They are your realizations of what is true and valuable in life. Your values, in other words. Now, if you stand up before a group and you have to have a joke to start out your conversation with them, then you are on very poor ground indeed. Because whatever you have to say, generally speaking, will not be worth hearing. And the reason it won't be worth hearing is because you think that it's a joke. Now you say, well, humor is always good in talking to people. No. When you get up and speak to people, and you are talking to people, what you want to say to people is, it's an honor to be here with you today. Because each one of you is a genius. Each one of you is magic. Each one of you is something very special. And immediately you get their attention. And they'll say, boy, is he misled. But you know better. And you say, don't you think that I'm misled? Because I really know. Because each one of you is a reflection of me. Now you see, if you teach what you believe, then the teaching and sharing is very easily done. But when you teach something that somebody else believes, like people, as I've said often before, people say to me, well, Herb, you say you're a philosopher? What philosophy do you teach? I said, my own. Well, what do you mean your own? You know, your own surely can't be good enough to teach to somebody else. Well, if it's good enough for me to live on and learn and be as myself, then it's certainly good enough for me to share with others. Well, why don't you share Kant, Spinoza, and Kierkegaard, and all the other wonderful people, Plato, Socrates, and you know, and whoever, you know. And I say, well, I don't believe what they teach. Well, they're good enough to still be teaching and be shared in all the major books and major philosophy courses and all the reference books of being men of great consequence. Yes, they were men of great consequence. And each one of them maybe touched the real philosophy at one point or another in their teaching career. But they did not have their whole teaching career based upon it. Socrates might have come the closest to it. Now, what is it that Socrates did?
Ask questions.
He taught people to think. He taught people to ask questions. He taught people to look within themselves for the answer. And I think that it's very significant what he did. And in the process, he got himself killed. But he taught the legislative children of the legislature to think. And he gave an example, for instance, of the legislature saying that abortion is not allowed under any circumstance. And the children, the men, the young men said, abortion is not allowed under any circumstances, blah, 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 blah. And so Socrates said, okay, that's fine. Now, what if your sister had been violated by some crazy, insane person whose genes would bring by the crazy, insane child, perhaps, into her life, and she didn't want to have to be responsible for that? What if she were molested and that happened to her? What would you say? Could she abort that child? Of course. Well, why should she be able to abort it and not anybody else? Well, why should the legislatures and the legislators' children and so forth be privileged to have special privileges that the rest of the world doesn't have? Isn't the law for everyone? Isn't the law of the government for everyone? And if it isn't, that's okay. Then whatever it is, Socrates said. And the boys went home and said, Socrates said we shouldn't have abortion, and that is, we should allow abortion, we should allow this, and we should. He didn't say any of that. He didn't say any of that, but the thing is, they went home and told their families that. They told their parents, and the parents went to the government where they were legislators, and they said, hey, this Socrates guy, he's teaching our kids an improper thing, to think for themselves, you know. And now he says that he thinks abortion should be allowed, and we say it shouldn't. Well, now, that was not the case of the particular issue at hand. It's just a convenient one that I bring up for your attention. But what do you think that they said to him? They said, Socrates, recant what you said. Take it back. Take it back, or we will exile you from the country. Or we will give you hemlock. We will kill you. And Socrates says, I will not run. And I will not recant, and do whatever you must. So he went to the jail and took the hemlock and died. And he died a martyr's death because of it. And of course his good buddy, student Plato, continued to carry his message on and leaving off a few of those things, but it was Plato who told all the stories because Socrates never wrote anything. Very interesting, isn't it? If you can be a teacher, can you stand up for principle? Can you stand up for the things you teach? Now, it's true he could have been a little more indirect with the students, but what difference would it make? If a student wants to misconceive something, they will misconceive it. If they want to go and say, I don't want my sister, if she ever gets pregnant from some crazy, insane person, to have to bear that child and have that child in their life, I don't want her to have to do that, you know. I want her to be free. Well, the father said, well, if it's my daughter, she's got that right, you know. But Dad, what about everybody else? And why not everybody else? And why not everybody else? You see, a teacher, by going out and saying what is right and what's wrong, gets himself in trouble. But a teacher who goes out and says, think about it. Think about what you would do, what your values are. And if it's right for you, it's the right. But just by saying those very things, there's a judgment. And people twist it around to tell their own story. And because they haven't got the strength to say, I believe this. This is what I believe. Socrates taught me to think, and he taught me to believe in myself. And Socrates didn't teach them to think and believe in themselves. He just taught them what? Principle. He just taught them the principle. Now, it's up to them to apply it. It's up to you to apply principle. Now, as a leader, how convincingly can you share principle to all those in your staff, in your world, wherever you're the leader? How convincingly are the people listening to what you have to say and believing what you have to say and following what you have to say? And how convincingly are you an effective leader to do that? Well, now, we have shared the idea about teachers. The teachers who are most effective are the teachers who help the students to fall in love first with themselves, really. The teachers say, I like me. It's something similar to that, you know. Not that I will be a good boy, or I am a good boy. The teacher doesn't say, Henry, you're a bad boy. Henry, you're a terrible boy. Henry, you did these things. The teacher goes up to Henry and says, Henry, you're a good boy. And a good boy doesn't do those things, but you're a good boy. Henry, you're always making me so proud of you. Henry, I know we make mistakes sometimes, but you're a good boy, Henry. Now, the teacher says, you're a good boy, Henry. You're a good boy, Henry. You're a good boy, Henry. Day after day after day, and pretty soon Henry is the good boy that he is. Now, if teacher said, you're a rotten boy, right on the board, I will not put the pigtails in the inkwells, I will not do these naughty things, I will not. Well, that just is a multiple impression of the negative into their consciousness to be whatever they want to do. A good leader knows the rules of the game. Now, a good mother knows the rules of the game. But how many people have the opportunity to be a good mother? Now stop and think about it. If a mother, a woman, is living in a family or by herself, and she's going to get married, and she's going to have kids, how many hours does she spend reading Dr. Spock? You know? Or whoever else is a noted authority on raising children. How many parents know what children are expected to do at certain ages, when they're 2 years old or 3 years old or 5 years old? How many parents know? Not many, really. They don't. It's not a bestseller. The bestsellers are the least read books, you know that. They're the least read books. Like the Bible, one of the least read books in the world. It's used sporadically, people open it for guidance and judgment and what have you, for an excuse, but they don't believe in it. They don't know it. A few people do, it's true, but most don't. The Sunday school teachers who get their kids to read the Bible are not the Sunday school teachers that make the kids memorize it. They're the Sunday school teachers who will take an incident or a part out of the Bible and read it to the kids and say, now, here is what took place that day. And with her imagination or his imagination, they go on into the drama of the day, into whatever they would have thought it would have been today if it were happening, you know. And oh, it's true, they were ad-libbing, but for 2,000 years, millions of ministers are preaching the gospel, all the same thing from the same book, you know. They're all interpreting what the book says, and so a Sunday school teacher can do it too. And mothers and fathers do it too. So a good leader is one who knows his subject, who knows what he's doing. A good teacher is one who loves children, who loves to teach children and share with children and tell them beautiful stories about life and whatever the subject may be. Because that's the most beautiful thing. I just tell you my remembrance of elementary school, and my favorite subject was my favorite teacher, and Miss Klockner. In fifth grade, she taught dinosaurs. And that's the first time, and we didn't have television and all those things in those days yet. So she brought these models of these dinosaurs in, and oh, we just sat there and worshiped those dinosaurs and learned their names, and we learned all about it. We learned how they affected one another and how they... That, I think, is the only class that I learned anything in. Not really, but it was a lot of fun. It was a lot of fun. She really made her subject come alive. Now, what kind of a leader are you? Are you leading yourself into accomplishing the goal that you want? If you can lead yourself, you have accomplished the greatest task of your life. If you can lead yourself into realizing that you are God, that you are divine, that you are wonderful, that you are beautiful, that you are fantastic. Now, you walk into a room, and it doesn't matter what you're wearing, and you walk into the room, and you have a smile on your face, and you look at the people, and you say, what a wonderful party, what a wonderful group. Your charisma just reaches out, and not one person in that room is going to notice what you have on, or what kind of shoes you have on, or what kind of pearls and necklaces you don't have on or do have on. They're not going to notice any of that. They're going to notice that you don't have a drink in your hand, perhaps, you know. But other than that, your charisma is what's going to reach out and grab them. That's your leadership. And that's the leadership that you talk to yourself, to lead yourself into being the most ideal, fulfilling person that anyone could ever be. Now, that goes for all of us. When we are the ideal, fantastic person, then what happens?
We are the ideal leader.
We are the ideal leader. And where was he trying to go? What bench was he trying to reach?
The I like me bench.
He was trying to reach the I like me bench. He just couldn't find I like me. Now, he will keep looking, and he'll find it. It's a nice bench. You found it.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, congratulations.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, congratulations, yeah.
I didn't stop.
No, he didn't stop until he found it. And there's a white bench there, and there's a wooden bench there. Okay. Huh?
Wooden bench.
Oh, yeah, the wooden bench is facing the I like me. The white bench is when I go up there and it's sunny and I can be in the shade. And it's very nice. So, what does it say at the wooden bench up there?
I like me.
I like me. Now, if you can say I like me, 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 100 million zillion times, you won't have time for anything else. Do you think that after a while you start liking yourself?
Mm-hmm.
After a while you start thinking, I'm a pretty good person. I'm a pretty nice person. I'm a very thoughtful and wonderful person. And it's great. And they are in the other room or under here. Now, talking the bonbons. Now, when we are in charge of ourselves, when we're in charge of our world, we're in charge of our thinking, then magical things happen to us, don't they? But when we're not in charge of our thinking, then not so magical things happen to us. Then the kids pick on us. Then the rest of the people in school, they like to say, oh, that person's stupid. And you may be the smartest kid in class. You may be the smartest kid in class, but they say you're stupid. You know why? Because you have no friends. You have no one who... Oh, we should keep it out here. You have no one who likes you, no one who cares for you. And people think that you're a silly cat, you know. And they don't want to have anything to do with you. Now, why is it they don't want to have anything to do with you? Well, they don't want to have anything to do with you because you don't like yourself. And it's just that simple. You don't like yourself. Now, why don't you like yourself? You say, well, I don't have pretty clothes. Well, I don't have nice shoes. I don't have a pretty dress or a pretty trouser. I have to wear my brother's hand-me-downs 2 or 3 times, you know, and I'm not happy. And then you look over at the kid who's very happy, and you say, well, look at that guy. You see how happy he is? See how everybody's enjoying him? You notice how everybody's enjoying him? Yeah. Well, did you ever notice what clothes he has on? No. Well, take a look. Take a look. He has patches on the seat of his pants. He has patches on his knees. And in those days, they were knickers. But it's short pants or knickers or long pants or whatever they are. And look at those shoes. Those are shoes that have been around the block a number of times. Maybe 3 different boys. And they're polished. They're polished as much as you can polish them, you know. But they're older shoes, you can tell that. And look at that sweater he's got. There's little extra places where you can see where Grandma or Mama has gone in there and pulled the threads together again to keep the sweater in one piece, you know. Gee, I never noticed that. You don't. You look at the leader's charisma. You look at a person who has leadership, and you see his charisma, you see his magic, you see who he is, and you don't see anything else because nothing else matters. And when you do that, then you have really seen a leader. And that leader can be 2 years, 8 years, 10 years old. That leader can be 50 or 100 years old. It doesn't make any difference. Any difference at all. Now, does that leader get sick? No. Does that leader have problems? No. Does that leader worry ever about anything? No. Why not? Because that leader likes himself. That leader thinks they're a very nice person. That leader thinks that they're doing good things. And that leader doesn't think I'm helping them. That leader thinks I'm helping me. And when he walks or she walks into a room and everybody looks at them and they're talking to him and da-da-da-da-da-da-da, happy as can be, it has nothing to do with what they're wearing or what they're looking like in their bodies. It's their attitudes. It's their charisma. Now, how do we create leadership in other people when we have that responsibility, which is every teacher's responsibility? How do we create leadership? Well, Henry has a little grandson who is just a little tyke. How old is he?
2.5.
2.5? Already?
He'd be 3.
My goodness sakes, it is interesting. So, Henry goes over to his daughter's house, right? And when he goes to his daughter's house, he reaches down to pick up, what's his name?
Addison.
Addison. Oh, yes, Addison. Yeah, you sent me more pictures than that. Addison. And he says to Addison, as he has every time he picked him up, Addison, you're a genius. Addison, you're God. Addison, you're wonderful. Addison. That's all the kid ever learned all of its life. That he's wonderful. That he's a genius. That he's God. That he's the creator of his world. And that every thought he thinks is bringing results in his world. And he doesn't even understand what it means. He doesn't even understand what it's supposed to mean. And he doesn't need to understand. It's being planted in his subconscious. So, as he goes on, Grandpa may not be around for a while as he's off on another safari in South Africa, you know, or mid-Africa, where the safaris take place. Where do they take place? Himalayas? Not Himalayas, but
Africa.
Kenya.
Yeah, that mountain in Africa.
Kenya.
Tanganyika. No, Anyhow, so Henry is off on his annual monthly tours into places unknown and having fun. And he may not be at his grandson's side, but he plants seeds in his ears, plants seeds in his eyes of leadership that Grandpa has. Grandpa is a great leader. Grandpa is a man of stature and magic. And then when he's away, he sends Addison tapes, or now cassettes or whatever it is, to play on this MP3 or CD or whatever. And on there he says, "Addison, ever since you've been born, the world has gotten better and better and better. And ever since you've been born, everybody in the world has been liking each other more. That's because you're such a loving guy. You're so loving. You are unconditional love. Addison, you are a super, 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 super guy." And Addison hears these things. He doesn't know what it means, but he likes the tone of voice that Grandpa's using. He likes Grandpa saying these things. And you know what's going to happen? Addison could be the next Addison age president of the United States. I wouldn't wish that on anybody, but that might be his choice, you see. But what kind of president would he make?
Great.
Wouldn't it be fabulous? It would be fabulous. I mean, here, a man who believes in himself and believes that when he thinks thoughts, the world smiles. When he thinks peace on earth, it is so. When he thinks health, harmony, and right action, abundance, and joy and peace for everyone on earth, that it is so. Isn't that wonderful?
Yes.
Now, do you have any grandchildren, and are you doing that with them? Do you have grandchildren? Are you doing that with them?
Mm-hmm.
Do you have any people in your life who have kids that are important to you, and do you do that with them? No, you don't. Do you send them discs? Well, then you don't. Now, do it. Now, perhaps you talk to them. I think Sylvia is one of these people that are called telephone people. She picks up the telephone and, you know, bends her ear. But that's good. And you, Christy?
Yes.
Yeah. How many discs would you have to make for the various grandchildren and nieces, nephews, and what have you got?
Oh, uncountable.
Uncountable.
Yes.
Well, I think it'd be a good time to start counting and start making them. And if it's uncountable, buy yourself a disc maker. Make your original and stick it in the uncountable disc maker, and then have it be automatic mailing, you know.
If I see one,
and email
it.
Huh?
If I see one, I have to buy it.
We'll sell yours.
Oh, I don't mind.
No, you don't want. It's this thing here, this high and heavy as a horse. But they're nice. No, it's better to buy one where you are, because to carry that, it would really weigh you down. But we find very great use for it, and it is fine. And then, of course, when you come up with some masterpiece, would you ever come up with a masterpiece?
Yes.
Then you take it down to the disc company, Ellen. You take it down to the disc company, who makes copies of these things. And what's the name of the company that made copies of our discs for our master tapes and stuff? Okay. Well, what is the name of the type of company they are? The disc making company.
Bond CD. You bond it. You can bond the CD in the computer.
What?
You can do it with the computer.
Christy, you are either thinking I'm not listening to you, or you are a fool. And I gather you think I'm not listening to you. You said you had uncountable beings to send the disc to. And if you're going to sit at your computer making uncountable discs, you really don't have much of very great value to do. Now, you go to a disc maker, and they will make you 100 or 1,000 discs for some nominal price. What? Bid it?
Lots of money.
Huh?
For good money.
Yeah, for $1,000 maybe, or whatever. But hey, that's not bad. That's cheap. When you consider several thousand discs, you know.
Yes.
And then they come with their little cases already, and all you and labels on it, and all you do is put it in an envelope and just mail it out. But you got to have a mailing list. So you set up a mailing machine. But you see, a good leader is always very careful. A good leader doesn't talk before he thinks. He listens to the divine in him and says the first thing that comes to his mind. Not the first thing that comes to his brain, but the first thing that comes to his mind. And when he does that, then he is always wise. Nice, huh? Sort of good stuff. It's the kind of thing that really would make our world, ooh, wow, you know, just fantastic. But are you ready for it? Can you handle it?
Yeah.
Now you see, you being facetious, or maybe not facetious, but you being facetious and saying you have uncountable ones you want to send it to, maybe you mean you have uncountable ones you want to send it to and you never intend to send it to them. You know, like all of the people in your hospital and all the people, doctors and nurses that you work with and all of the representatives of the drug companies. Man, would you cause a riot if you start sending that out to the representatives of the drug companies? Goodness. A couple of your drug representatives want me to come visit them in Iraq and Iran and different places, remember? Yeah, that invitation still stands?
Yeah.
So, you see, beautiful things. Wonderful things to take place. Are you ready?
Yes, I am.
Are you ready?
Yes.
I like that. Now, did you notice the charisma that shines out of these ladies? Did you notice it, Ellen?
Yes.
You're ready too?
Yes.
Sylvia, are you ready?
Yes.
Ingeborg, are you ready?
Oh, yes.
Oh, yes. And Henry?
I was born ready.
He was born under the star of a genius. Not under the star of a genius. He was the star genius. And God, all wrapped up in one. Beautiful. Well, think on these things. What values define a leader? Is everyone capable of being an effective leader? The values that define a leader are that you like what you're doing and like to share it, and that you come to the realization, this is a point we haven't made before, but you come to the realization that you're not teaching anybody anything. They already know it. You are merely their guide or leader. A leader, yes, you're their leader, guiding them to reveal what is already within. You are guiding them to reveal what's already within. And you see, that's really quite nice. Quite wonderful, quite beautiful. And that's what life's all about. And if you want to continue with your leadership program, just take your courses here at the University of Healing. Check with us at the www.goduni.org, goduni.org, and we will send you the syllabus, and you may start the courses. And we are thinking of raising the prices. We haven't done it just yet, but we're thinking of raising it to $4,000 a course, because with the money the way it is nowadays, it should be. People say, well, you should make it cheaper. No, why? We know what it's worth. And all those who take it change their life immeasurably and become an expression of the genius that's within them. And if anyone doesn't want it, they don't have to. Now, you can get it all free if you want by just going online and picking up our books that are online, Art and Science, Wholeness, Song of Spirit, and Illumination. And if they're not online, they'll be online shortly, because I'm going to put them online. And if you want to read it, you can read it. But taking it as a course is much more effective, because you're guided along your leadership path of being the genius God that you are right now. Lovely to talk with you. Join us next time. I'm always here sharing my love and joy with everyone. And I love you. I love you.
I love you.